this morning. United States versus Elon.
May it please the Court. My name is Trevor Brown, and I represent the appellant, Verna Pilon. Mrs. Pilon is a 60-year-old woman who suffers from a number of serious health conditions. She is currently serving a 78-month sentence. Ms. Pilon's sentence is the result of procedural and substantive errors, the cumulative weight of which warrants resentencing. Today, I will discuss three errors that require this Court's attention, all of which represent a common theme of inadequate record support for the district court's actions. The first error is the district court's refusal. The first error is the district court's decision to apply the abuse of trust guideline. The record does not support the use of Section 3B1.3.
And that argument was waived, I think.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the argument was not waived. It was forfeited. This is an argument that the government raises in its response brief. The problem is that this court construes waiver principles liberally and in favor of the defendant.
Right, but this wasn't one of those cases where it was simply overlooked. I mean, it was specifically given away in the sentencing memorandum filed by the defense.
That's correct.
So that's a waiver.
That's correct, Your Honor. But Ms. Pilon didn't gain any advantage from retreating from this position. Ms. Pilon also didn't advance this position and then later retract it at sentencing. So those two facts distinguish it.
It doesn't matter. I mean, if she affirmatively gave it away in no uncertain terms in the sentencing memorandum, then it's gone.
Respectfully, Your Honor,
You have some stronger arguments here. You might want to use your
time. You might
want
to move on to your...
Fair enough, Your Honor.
Okay.
Then the second point I'd like to discuss is the district court's refusal to award Ms. Pilon acceptance of responsibility credit. At sentencing, the district court explicitly denied credit because it incorrectly found that Ms. Pilon only chose to plead guilty after hearing seven witnesses testify. The government offers alternative explanations but does not and cannot confront the fact that the district court's stated rationale was clearly erroneous. The third error is the district court's failure to select a sentence that accounts for Ms. Pilon's age, health, family ties, and low reoffense risk. Ms. Pilon's lengthy sentence is far greater than necessary to accomplish any sentencing goal. At sentencing, Ms. Pilon's attorney raised these concerns. The district court ignored them and, without record support, concluded that Ms. Pilon's history and characteristics show someone who is prone to recidivism. That conclusion is contradicted by empirical evidence, and this court should rein in district court efforts to impose improperly punitive sentences. With respect to the district court's procedural error in denying Ms. Pilon acceptance of responsibility credit, the government's response brief and its ex post rationale are really all attempts to recharacterize this as a substantive discussion on the merits. But frankly, those efforts are irrelevant, and they misunderstand Ms. Pilon's point. The argument here is a very specific one, a very narrow one, and that is that the district court relied on clearly erroneous facts to deny acceptance credit. In Ritzema, this court explicitly prohibited district courts from relying, even in part, on clearly erroneous facts when denying acceptance credit. Yet the record demonstrates that that's what the district court did in this case. I would direct the court to the two critical points in the record. The first is the transcript of the proceedings from the morning of May 23, 2012, which is at page 2 of our short appendix. This is where Ms. Pilon, through her attorney, informed the district court that she wanted to change her plea, that she wanted to plead guilty. This is before any witness testimony had occurred. The second relevant fact is at page 14 of the sentencing transcript, which is at page 4 of our short appendix. And this is where the district court states its erroneous conclusion that it was after hearing seven witnesses testify that Ms. Pilon chose to plead guilty. Again, consistent with Ritzema, the district court is prohibited from relying, even in part, on clearly erroneous factual findings.
Well, it is a matter of undisputed fact that she didn't plead guilty until after opening statements and a number of witnesses.
That's correct, Your Honor. Chronologically, that's factually accurate. The problem and the critical fact in this case is that she came forward before any witness testimony and
but
told...
But unsuccessfully.
I believe
the first effort to plead guilty she didn't plead guilty.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the critical fact that we're identifying is from the proceedings the morning of the 23rd, which
critical
is the day.
Fact is, you start a jury trial, you get everybody together, and you're about ready to start. It doesn't make really much difference.
Your Honor, and that could be a substantive reason to discuss acceptance of responsibility credit here, but that wasn't the reason that the district court gave. The district court said that it was because Ms. Pilon chose to plead guilty after hearing seven witnesses testify, and that was the reason that it was choosing to deny acceptance credit. Ms. Pilon's position is that the district court cannot do that consistent with Ritzema. Because the district court used a clearly erroneous factual finding to deny acceptance credit.
What was erroneous about that?
That Ms. Pilon came forward before hearing any testimony and expressed her interest in changing a plea
but
of guilt.
But she was equivocal about it, and she and her counsel went back and forth, and then the decision was deferred until the noon recess, and then the decision was deferred until the end of the day. As a matter of uncontrovertible fact, that's what happened. So what's factually erroneous about the district court saying you did it too late?
Your Honor, with respect to the delays, the government advanced a number of sort of reasons why, some hesitancy, especially in light of the failed plea hearing the night before, why it wanted to go ahead with the witnesses that it had already brought in at its own expense. And so Ms. Pilon and her attorney agreed to hold off, but the record is clear that Ms. Pilon expressed her desire to plead guilty well before hearing any testimony. And
you
so
know, this is all. The fact is that the district judge is there looking at this woman, determining whether she really accepts responsibility or is forced into it. She says she really didn't accept responsibility. It just was the best thing that she could do.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the district court did state later during the sentencing hearing, it sort of affirmed its misunderstanding of the record in saying that it believed, the district court believed that Ms. Pilon was truly remorseful, that she did accept responsibility, and then in its sort of remaining commentary noted that the 11th hour nature of the change of plea hearing was regrettable. This was after the district court had already denied acceptance credit. So, again, Ms. Pilon is focusing on the procedural reasons, the procedural problem of the district court's stated reasoning when it actually denied acceptance credit.
There was a warning when the first guilty plea effort failed about the denial of acceptance of responsibility credit, wasn't there? Didn't the government say that it would object to any such credit?
That may have been the government's position before trial. And that's
But I mean, to the extent that there was any ambiguity about, you know, what she had to do here to get the benefit, she was under no illusions about that.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but the problem in this case is again, it's a very narrow one, and that's that the district court went on the record and said, here's the reason why Ms. Pilon doesn't deserve acceptance credit. And that reason is directly contradicted by the record.
Actually, it's completely borne out by the chronological record. Maybe something else was going on inside her head, but, you know, she didn't plead guilty until after a full day of testimony, and whether she subjectively wanted to earlier on that day doesn't make a difference.
Your Honor, chronologically, that's an accurate statement of the facts. And the problem, though, is that, again, Ms. Pilon expressed that desire, and that's what the district court failed to catch, that Ms. Pilon wanted to, that she didn't.
The problem is an expression of desire doesn't count for purposes of getting this credit.
Respectfully, Your Honor, if the court concludes that she didn't express that desire until after hearing testimony,
the expression of it doesn't count. The action counts. She didn't act on any intent or expression until the end of the day.
Yes, Your Honor. In summary, then, Ms. Pilon would respectfully ask that this court vacate her sentence and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, Sunil Harjani for the United States. The government asks that this Court affirm the sentence below. The District Court did not abuse discretion. Quickly, on the acceptance of responsibility, what changed from the day before, when the change of plea failed, to the next day was the testimony of eight victim witnesses that implicated the defendant in the scheme. It was the District Court's observation of that defendant at trial has those witnesses were testifying that led the district court to conclude that acceptance of responsibility should be denied. In addition to that, the statement that morning before opening statements were made was unclear. She never really expressed her desire to plead guilty, as convincingly as appellant counsel stated. It was, let's bring this up at lunch. The lunch break went by and nothing happened. Even that morning, the district judge warned her, you're going to have to admit facts in order to plead guilty. And she couldn't even respond to that simple instruction by the judge. What the record really shows is a lot of confusion and a lot of uncertainty about whether or not this defendant was really going to plead guilty. She had actually lied the day before. It wasn't just a failed change of plea hearing. She had under oath said she was not involved in the scheme, and she didn't do anything. Though that was under oath, that was a lie. The next day, at the end of the day, what changed was the testimony of eight victim witnesses that implicated her, and then the change of plea was successful. On those bases alone, it is sufficient for the district court to deny acceptance of responsibility, without even talking about the additional basis, really, that she was a sovereign citizen. And she had told the court that it had no jurisdiction over her multiple times throughout the proceedings over the course of this case. It showed a lack of remorse, a lack of real recognition of what was about what the crime was. And her late plea really was an expression of a desire to avoid the inevitable, which was that she was going to get convicted in this case. Having said that, Your Honor, unless there are any other questions, we'll ask you to affirm the sentence. Thank you.
How much time?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to quickly respond to just two points. The first is that counsel mentions that the record is unclear, and that is the substance. That is the heart of Ms. Pilon's argument, that the record in this case is simply insufficient.
I don't think that's what counsel said. Counsel said there was some confusion on the defendant's part about what she wanted to do, but I don't think there's any lack of clarity or a concession that the record is unclear. She never definitively made it plain that she was ready, willing, and able to plead guilty.
I understand, Your Honor. If I could, with my remaining time, I'd like to discuss the third issue that Ms. Pilon raises on appeal today, which is the substantive unreasonableness of Ms. Pilon's sentence. 3553 requires a sentencing court to address a defendant's non-frivolous sentencing arguments. In this case, the court did mention Ms. Pilon's...
Generally, you're not permitted to do that on rebuttal, since you didn't take any of your time. This was your best argument, counsel. I gave you an invitation, and you didn't take it.
In that case, I would thank the court for its time and consideration. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Brown, you're here from the University of Wisconsin Law School. Thank you for participating, and thanks to the University of Wisconsin for its participation in this program. Thanks to all counsel. Case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.